This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hubley.
Hey, big 3 o'clock hour coming up in the next segment. A little stock up, stock down. We do every single Wednesday. Coming up 3:25, stock up, stock down, and then in the final hour, final segment of the hour, our guy Danny Cannell will join us, who covers college football. Nobody covers it as well as he does, and does a little NFL as well. So. I bet you he could probably give you some. And what the hell's going on with CJ? I bet you Danny Cannell's got an opinion.
He covers it all now.
Yeah, he does it all. So we'll talk to Danny Cannell coming up as the college football playoff. The recent poll has come out, and we see Georgia's on the outside, and A&M a little bit behind them as well. So. We'll talk to Danny Cannell coming up in the final segment of the hour. But this was something. We carried this live. If you want to hear it in full, you can listen to it on Sports Radio 610. You can find the Odyssey app and look at yesterday's 2 o'clock hour around 2:35, 2:40, the entirety of D'Amico Ryan's presser we have there live. But he did talk about this that stuck out to us and stuck out to many of you as I saw the text line, the 5-Hour Energy fan line, 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot, Sports Radio 610 and Football Superfans text line, and the YouTube and Twitch. The part about him explaining how he saw the Titus Howard, C.J. Stroud, which appeared to be Titus Howard, stripping or trying to take the ball away from his own quarterback and run with it. This was his explanation if you missed it yesterday.
With that play, it was to start the play, we had an issue with the cadence. We all weren't on the same page with the cadence. A guy got off the ball quick. We were late off the ball, and they were able to get the sack on CJ. And not sure what happened. From my perspective, it looked like Titus was just trying to make sure he held CJ. And it's just something that, he wasn't trying to take the ball. I would say if you're speculating there, he wasn't trying to take the football. He's just trying to protect CJ.
Yeah, trying to protect CJ, said it twice there. So
yeah.
But I know for you, you're just like, no, just stop. Just stop.
Look,
this aspect, because it's deeper than what he just said. It's a deeper meaning of what he does.
No, but this is extreme, but it's exactly what my issues are with D'Amico Ryans. And really, like I said, Nick is guilty of it when he talks, and CJ's guilty of it, the three biggest decision makers. Like, there's just such an extreme effort to protect guys, if you will, that they're risking looking silly. Like the text line yesterday, what do you want him to do, Clint? Like, perfect. I want him to stop doing that. Like, he did everything he could to blame Laramie Tunsil getting his ass whooped in a critical moment in the game on the snap count issue, and he finally got to where we just laid off the ball. Oh, Jared Parham or whoever his name is, he did, his ass was in a track stance over there. He knew exactly when to move. And so, like, he in that one cut, did everything you can to not just say, we were laid off the damn ball in critical moments, we got to be better. Right? And then, given the opportunity to go several different directions with what the hell Titus Howard was doing, you lie, bold-faced lie. There's no way that you watch that. There's no way that you took the, which you should at this point in time, to look, take the time to look into it if you hadn't looked into it. He clearly was trying to take the football from C.J. Stroud. Now, I believe he had good intentions, and his thought was, C.J., you've got three defenders wrapped around you. One of them I was responsible for blocking. Give me the football, and let me see if I can go run and get this first down. Cool, he's a competitor. It's a silly-ass move, but he's clearly trying to do that. And D'Amico risked looking and sounding silly trying to protect the guy, right? Yeah, I mean, like, at that point in time, that was a great opportunity to say, my left tackle was late getting off the football, and in critical moments, we got to be better than that, and we got to give our quarterback time to execute. And my right tackle did a really good job off the snap, but he quit on the play. And his guy ended up being in on the, because the quarterback got flushed that direction because my left tackle got beat so quick. And he quit on the play. So I'm less worried about what the hell he was trying to do with taking the football from the quarterback. And I'm more worried about we can't quit on the play. I'm more worried about we got to get off the football in critical situations. And by the way, all you fans that are selling your damn tickets that cost us a false start because the Detroit Lions fans were so loud,
I would
greatly appreciate if you'd quit selling your damn tickets and at the most critical moments in the game, the noise is louder than when we're on the damn road. Like you could, there's three different things you could have, that ways you could have approached that thing, and instead,
he probably want to avoid that last one.
Instead, well, no, I can understand where he'd want to avoid that last one, but at the end of the day, hell, you got tired of avoiding it. At some point today, man, look, I know you're different than D'Amico, but at some point in time, you just got to call a spade a spade, and it really is what it is. And the reality of it is, though, is instead you risk sounding silly. I go back to like Nick Caserio after the Green Bay game. Oh, that game worked out about how we thought it would. What?
Yeah, 6'10" talks on the radio.
Like that. That is precisely what I would greatly appreciate. We don't hear coming from the organization. And I'm not saying you got, but when you're asked a specific question about a specific play, which everybody on God's green earth knows involved Laremy Tunsil missing a block and Titus Howard quitting on a play and trying to strip your quarterback, let's just talk about it. If we're still worried about hurting feelings and we're still worried about how people are going to respond, you're not a championship caliber football team on another level. Other than just what we're watching on the football field, we got to get beyond that.
But Clinton Tyler, you don't even have to. You don't even have to tonight. We don't have to get into just talk about it. We just don't have to say, "Hey, Titus wasn't trying to strip him. He was trying to hold him up." That's all. Like, we just ain't got to. We ain't like we don't have
treat
to
treat me like Ray Charles, man.
I bet C.J. Stroud looks like he tried to wrestle a mountain lion. Like, I bet his arms are scratched
like
to hell.
Like, I get it. Like, someone texted in, like it or not, this is how sports work today.
No,
player,
it's not.
Player happiness
no,
is priority.
No, it's not.
It is priority. I think it is.
No, it's not. Kirby Smart got up on that stage just Saturday and said what his player did was stupid. It was idiotic.
Now, some do, but most don't.
I mean, that's just the reality. If we're at a spot where we got to worry about Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard on a play like that, if we're so conscious of people's feelings that you can't answer a direct question about that play just in a manner of, hey, man, I'm more worried about not quitting on the play by my right tackle and my left tackle getting off the ball on time. That's what I'm worried about right now. Like, if you're so worried, they're never going to fix the pass protection problems. If that's where we're at with how we're handling players, whether we're talking about the Texans or we're talking about all of football, if that's the guys that handle it differently are always going to have an advantage.
Yeah, it would be great if he came out, but he could have even just said something like, "Hey, man, we just got to play better football. We just got to play better football. That sequence is not what it in any way of what we want to be doing, and we got to play better football." He ain't have to say no, y'all. Titus didn't try to take the ball from him. He said it twice emphatically.
No, y'all imagine that.
He didn't try to take the ball from him. That's all I'm saying is, you ain't got to kill him. Like, you know what I mean? I don't think Dusty was this. This was the Dusty school of keeping, like, you know, protecting players, in as far as he could.
I'm from a different generation.
But I don't think Dusty would say, oh, no, that was never catcher interference. Well, we saw it hit his glove. No, it wouldn't. Like, I don't think he would take it that far. That one, that's all for me. It's just like, hey, man,
but that's what I'm saying, Ron. Like, this is just an extreme example of, it's just like, why is it so difficult? Because, again, I don't care how they handle it as a fan. Ultimately, what I want to see as a Texans fan is I want to see a better product on the field. And my biggest concern with it is, When you come out and you defend silliness like that, or you don't even address it directly, the message it sends to them is it's not that big of a deal.
Whew.
When you come out last night on Texans All Access and talk about how important practice is to you and how important this practice is to getting things right, and then you allow Laremy Tunsil to rest on a Wednesday, it's hard for me as a fan to go, this product's going to get better. This is going to get fixed.
The other
this
is part, going to change.
That's where I don't care what they do. Look, I love D'Amico Ryans. I love everything he brings to the table. I think the Texans are in great hands. I simply do not and cannot relate to handling grown ass men that are paid millions of dollars that are quitting on plays and not playing up to their ability. And this is week after week. I simply have I cannot relate to not being able to go, yeah, man, that quit on that play ain't it. Not he's a piece of crap and he can't play and he knows better and he's an idiot and he's the, no, just, yeah, man, I'm more concerned with the fact that he quit on that play instead of what he did with trying to take the ball from the quarterback. Like we can't even do that. Like, I can't relate to it. And I don't know how problems get fixed with that approach.
I think the other part for me in just like, hey, man, he takes it for us. For his players, right? He's going to protect his players is what he does. The other part for me with that is I think some guys can handle and understand what it is that he's doing. Like, I think CJ knows when CJ makes mistakes and he comes up and kind of downplays them and protects him like he did there. I think CJ understands, like, yo, coach is doing me, doing me a favor. He's kind of holding me down. But I know that pass was on me. I know that decision was on me. I think Will Anderson the same way. I know that was on me. Like, I know what coach is doing. I know that was on me. And there are several players on this team that fit that. I think there are some players on this team that really don't understand, like, hey, man, I'm just protecting your ass. But this is not how I genuinely feel. Like, I think there are some other guys that hear him kind of come to defense for him and then almost believe, like, yeah, that it, like he's right. That's what it is. Like, yeah, man, I was trying to protect him. Or, yeah, man, it really wasn't that I just got beat like that. I mean, it was some kind of cadence issue. Like, I just think there are some guys that don't handle the he is taking a bullet for me thing, right? Because they honestly believe what he is saying and not understanding it.
And you know, that you're right.
I wonder if he should do that with.
Yeah, well, but I mean, here's the thing. Again, you are right, Ron. There's no doubt about it. But the problem is when you start catering to when you start catering to the ones that are having the problem week after week after week after week after week, it becomes like, again, it's contagious. It goes down like now you lose. And I personally, be honest with you, I think this is just on the offensive side of the football, because I think if this were the same issue, like all the issues we talked about, like if that was an issue with his defensive line, oh, we'd hear about it. They wouldn't play. Guys wouldn't be on the field. Right now, I understand defensively it's more of a rotational side of the football, so you have options. You can pull guys out. I mean, like it's like last year. Where did Jalen Petrie end up? Over by his ass, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like it happens. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how you hold guys accountable, Ron, when you start spending so much time worrying about ultimately the feelings or the response you're going to get of trying to fix a problem, which is a physicality problem, an accountability problem, a want-to problem, a just whatever you do, just don't quit. I mean, just if Titus Howard and Dalton Schultz, if those two guys right there would just put their, like, just don't quit. Do not quit until the whistle blows. I think their problems would be solved. The willingness to like just completely stop in the heat of battle blows my mind.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll be solved, but I hear you. It would definitely help some of them.
Think about that, like that play right there, Ron, that we're talking about. Like if Titus Howard just doesn't quit on the play, if he just keeps bulldogging his guy past the quarterback, like if he never in his mind, if he never shuts off and quits, if he just keeps mad dogging, bulldogging that defensive end and puts him on his back, C.J. Stroud had already escaped the guy that ran right by Laremy Tunsil. Now C.J. Stroud can set his feet, he can continue moving, but because he couldn't do those things, I mean because Titus Howard didn't finish his block, the guy that he was supposed to finish his block now is in the mix and tackling C.J. Stroud, and it's a sack. You could have avoided a sack. You could have made, in that critical moment, you could have made the Laremy Tunsil late get off a non-factor. But because you quit, we're now talking about Laremy. We're now talking about you're quitting. We're now talking about you tried to strip the ball from the quarterback and the quarterback taking another hit. Just finish.
Yeah, some people are rolling in. They're with you. I wish they would be a little bit more straightforward. Somebody texted and said, Coach Prime would tell it like it is.
I think I'll be straight up, Ron. I think this is just what D'Amico.
I'll be honest, I couldn't believe he said that yesterday.
Well, I could not believe he
really nailed down on that.
Right. It's extreme. It's extreme. But again, if D'Amico were an offensive minded head coach, I think he'd be a lot harder on the offensive guys and a little bit more lenient on the defensive side of the guys and let the defense coordinator handle that. I think what I see is a lot of this stuff is on the offensive side of the football, and it's an excuse, by the way. It's a poor excuse, but it is, I understand. Like D'Amico to go put his foot down in an offensive meeting room, he would be stepping on the toes of guys that he's delegated to this point. And for him, I think they've earned like we're well beyond the time that he should have walked in that meeting. But I could see where D'Amico Rines is like, hey man, I'm not stepping on toes at this point in time.
I don't know. Maybe he saw a different angle that showed him that he wasn't trying to.
Well, I mean,
maybe he sat down and really watched that and did not and saw it in a way that
if I were D'Amico Rines and Nick Cassero, which I think they are, these guys they overanalyze. if that happened at a critical moment in the game, I would watch every copy of every tape that I have to get a full understanding of what the hell happened. I would not just watch the coach's film from a 30,000-foot view and say, yeah, I don't think he was just holding him up.
Who knows? Maybe Blake Fisher starts Sunday.
The biggest bugaboo.
Probably not. Coming up, a little stock up, stock down. We'll discuss ours, and you can also send yours in as well. That's coming up next.
Tootski, come on. Mm-hmm.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Ah. Every football season brings highs.
Yes! Rock and roll!
And lows.
Every week, though. There's no excuse for that.
Oh, no.
It's time to buy or sell.
I tell him to sell!
It's Texans Stock Up, Stock Down on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
I pump those numbers out. Those are rookie numbers in this racket.
Bell again.
I love this damn bell.
I know you do.
That's right. It's Stock Up, Stock Down, Texan style. Do it every Wednesday here on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. Right around 3:20, 3:25 p.m. It is simple. It's where we take a peek into the Texans market of sorts. Then Ron and Clint are going to tell you which Texans they're buying stock in, the ones they're liking what they see, and what Texans players, if any, that stock is plummeting. And it's not looking good on the film and otherwise. So let's get it rolling. Channel your inner Wolf of Wall Street here. Texans stock up. Let's start with some positivity in the spirit of D'Amico Rines, the Texans head coach. Some positivity, week 11 Texans, stock up. We're on the show, Hughley. Tell me what or who or which Texans players you are buying stock in heading into week 11.
Thank you. It's just Ron. I'm going to say Jarrett Patterson. And I say that because, listen, this offensive line has been like historic in how bad they have been when it comes to pass protection the last several weeks. It started with the Packer game, which was bad. Got worse with the Colts. It got bad to the tune of 8 sacks and 11 hits with the Jets. And there was some changes. They brought him in for a drive where Kenyon Green got hurt. Probably the best drive they had all game, maybe in a couple of games. And then he started not at guard like he did when he came in for Kenyon, but started at center. And we heard D'Amico talk about him and his communication with the calls. We felt like would be a thing that would be helpful. This is what he said. And they moved Juice to guard, who had played there before. But with him going in at center, Clint, even though, yes, they gave up 4 sacks, and, I mean, it ain't, you know, great yet. Clearly, the Lions had a much better offensive line. But it was much, much better, and it seemed like the communication up front was better. Didn't seem like the Lions were trying a lot of stunts or anything, but we just didn't see just gaping, just guys just coming in free and missing. And I will give credit to the center, Jarrett Patterson, as he stepped in to see this offensive line in pass protection in particular. Now, run blocking, that was rough. They took several steps back with that. But in terms of what the big problem was, pass protection, it seemed to improve. And with him stepping into the center spot, I give him credit. His stock is going up.
I couldn't agree more, Ron. Jarrett Patterson's money. That's a big-time run defense. That's not just been really good and statistically good, but they're literally designed to stop the run, and the way that they game plan and call plays is to stop the run. And so no surprise that that we didn't run the ball as well as Joe Mixon has ran the ball, but Jarrett Patterson was absolutely tremendous when it comes to the communication and giving this team a better chance to win play in, play out, whether it was run or pass. And so I agree with you, man. Him being, and we'll see how they fare against a better defensive front, but him getting in there and communicating better and being more reliable, that is definite stock up for Jarrett Patterson. I love it.
There you go. Ronnie Ronald Hughley rolling with the big man Patterson for his stock up. Let's get the former NFL quarterback stock up here for the Houston Texans as they prepare for Week 11 Monday Night Football in Dallas. Dirty Red, Clint Starner. Which Texans, if any, are you buying stock in right now?
John Metchie.
Yeah,
John Metchie for me. He has been really good when the opportunity was given to him. Whether you're talking about late in the preseason when he ended on a strong note, or you're talking about the last handful of games where the Texans have been without Nico, without Diggs, and they've had to depend on John Metchie. I think John Metchie, whether he's catching the football or CJ missed him a couple of times, depending on what game you're watching. He is winning at all levels of the field. He's winning in the red zone. He's winning in the quick game on critical drives. He appears to be very quarterback friendly from that perspective. And so John Metchie, for me, we've gone from I don't think he's ready, I don't know if he can play at this level. And I mean play, he could be on a roster. I mean, I don't know if he could be a difference maker at the NFL level. I've gone from that to watching this dude play, and last week it all came to a head for me Sunday night where I believe John Metchie is a good fill-in at the a really good fill-in for the number 3 receiver with the Houston Texans.
Yeah, let's see if he can continue to maybe put some more together.
Yeah,
see if
that's like, the key.
Can he come out do it again? Because he's going to get the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get the opportunities.
All right, Patterson and John Metchie, those are your stock ups for the Houston Texans right now, according to Clint Starner and Ron the Show Hughley. If you're just tuning in, this is The Drive with Starner and Hughley. It's Texans stock up and stock down for Week 11. And let's stick with you, Dirty Red, right here.
Okay.
Want to hear now maybe these Texan or these Texans that just ain't living up to what you want to see. Stock down for the Houston Texans right now.
Well, for me, it's Titus Howard. And, not to pile on Titus.
Strip sacking his own quarterback?
Well, I mean, that's just the cherry on top, yeah. Right? But the reality of it is, Ron, if you remember correctly, last week before the Sunday night game, one of my takeaways on Tape Drop Tuesday was, yes, there are guys getting beat in pass protection that have to be corrected. But for some reason, Titus Howard is so soft at the tackle position, just allowing the DNs to push him into the lap of the quarterback, that it's shrinking the pocket. So the level of of let's just call it a technique and a fundamental. Like whatever he was trying to execute there was allowing defensive linemen to push him into the left. So I was worried about Titus Howard before all this went down. And then this week when I watched Titus Howard, it's multiple times. It's not just the when he's trying to strip the quarterback and he quit on that play, but the level of quit, the inability to strain, and when I say strain, try to move mass regardless, front side, backside, pulling, blocking down, doesn't matter to me. Your job, like the fundamental components of your position is all about moving mass. The unwillingness or inability to do that and even try to do it on a consistent basis, for me, I'm selling my Titus Howard stock, and I'm damn sure not buying any more, boys.
That's laid out pretty beautifully, and I think a lot of people would agree with you on Titus Howard stock down for the Houston Texans right now. Ron?
I'm seeing Titus a lot here on the Texans.
Yeah, I think Texans fans agree with Clint Sterner. Ron Hughley, Texans stock down as we head into Week 11 in Dallas.
Yeah, mine goes to Nick Caserio.
Ooh.
I think Titus Howard, I think he can take a part in that.
First time we got somebody not wearing pads.
I think he can take some part in that. But even with, like, the obviously the ones like, you know, hey, you know, Titus or Kenyon Green or any of those others, it's more of the like, hey, you've had a lot of injuries and you got yourself in a situation where, like, you just – you know, you let go of a corner, and now you got to bring him back, and you felt like you were short a corner when Kamari Lassiter got hurt, and you're playing less than, and like the fill-ins or the people you brought in to maybe back up certain guys in the situation you're in with your offensive line, and not having, you know, better places to turn when you knew that at least it was on the table that a guy like a Kenyon Green could struggle. And you didn't have that really on the table as somebody to come and help. The running back situation, we're sitting here and there's no real backup running back, and Dare Ogunbowale has to be on the field, and you had one in Cam, and you traded him away for nothing. You didn't really make any moves to help your team at the deadline while everybody else around you felt like they were able to find a way to make moves. Right now, just with some of the important moves that he has made, or lack thereof, it is not looking good. A lot of the issues that the Texans are having are personnel issues. Mm. And a lot of that comes and falls at the feet of Nick Caserio. Hopefully this doesn't mean that we can't get frozen yogurt. Still might not be still hoping to do that. But right now, I think my stock down goes with Nick Caserio when you see a lot of the personnel problems that the Texans are facing.
That's it.
There it is. There it is.
That's the closing bell.
Stock up, stock down. Someone else who deserves a bell, Danny Cannell, our college football analyst. He will join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on everything that came out with the playoff standings getting released and how he sees the rest of this season coming together. All of that coming up next.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Next with Danny Cannell.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in as we are live here on The Drive, and we are happy to be joined by our guy, See old Danny, college football analyst Danny Cannell. Danny joins us courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff, conference, Heisman, and college football week 12 lines. And there are a lot of big games coming up this weekend. But yesterday they unveiled the latest playoff rankings, and we got an understanding of who is in right now and who is on the outside looking in. For you, Danny, what kind of jumped off the page to you in the latest rankings?
What's up, fellas? Good to be on. I'll start it off. We'll just set it ablaze right off the get-go. I have no idea how SMU is ranked 14th while Texas is ranked 3rd. They are 11 spots different. And, like, I don't have a problem if you want to put Texas in the top 5, but SMU then should be right on their heels or even possibly in front of them if we go on the resumes. SMU is the most disrespected team in the country right now. They've got 2 wins over top 25 opponents. Their loss is against a top 6 team in BYU, and they were playing a different quarterback and figuring out their quarterback situation. I think they're one of the more complete teams in the country. So I think SMU was the most disrespected team. And Texas gets a huge bump from their brand. And it's just a reality. And it's not only Texas that gets that bump. Penn State has no business being ranked where they are either, if you just went off the resume. But Texas, and it's not really their fault, because no one knew that Oklahoma was going to be as bad as they were, or that they were going to be without 5 receivers when they played against Texas, or that Michigan was going to be a 500 team when the season started. But I don't think Texas resumes holds much weight, which, if we're going to do this, you know, beauty pageant, which we have as a college football playoff, we've got to be better at putting teams in at least similar tiers. And I think SMU belongs right on the same tier with Texas.
Hey, Danny, who do you think is the best team in football right now?
I think it's Oregon, but I will say this, Clint, I don't think it's, like, years past, we've had teams like in Alabama that runs the table, and you're like, oh, that team is just head and shoulders above everybody else. Michigan last year kind of felt that way, at least until they got to the playoffs. Oregon, I think, is the most complete team, and that's who I picked to win it in the preseason. But I would still stick with that. Like, there's no reason to get off of them, but I don't feel like they're unbeatable. And even Ohio State went into Eugene and was 1 second away from potentially getting a chance to win that game if Will Howard, you know, doesn't slide, you know, and sees the clock, you know, in time to get that. So I really think, and this is one of the things I think is going to be awesome about this 12-team playoff, there will be a number of teams that can win this thing. So I do think Oregon's the most complete team, but I think there's a lot of teams that are right in this category of really good teams, but not elite or unbeatable by any means.
No, I'm with you. That's what I have noticed. You know, it seems like we may have all, there may not be an undefeated team. I mean, a teams of the top. I think obviously there's potential of some, but it feels like there may not be an undefeated team because there's so much parity. Like, you watch Oregon. I've seen Oregon, and I don't necessarily look at it and say, well, that's the best team in the country. I think their resume's the best. But it is interesting to me to see how close, as you said, no elite teams, but how close teams are right now this year.
Yeah, and so that's why these 12 spots are going to be so highly sought after and coveted, because half the battle is going to be making it, especially some of these teams in the SEC. And, you know, and that's why the ACC and Big 12 are trying to push to potentially get 2 teams, because even when you get there, there could be a lot of teams that you could see potentially winning it that might get left out. It's just the way the season has unfolded. So that's why there's already been, probably earlier than ever and stronger than ever, campaigns being started of saying, oh, why wouldn't a 3-loss SEC team get into the playoffs? You know, that's the very, you know, a common thread that we're starting to see this week trying to make that push. But I do think, because of that parity, we have to respect the regular season more than ever, because we don't truly know who the best teams are. So that's something I think we should look at. And I do think this is a new landscape that we need to be getting used to, because it used to be where Bama, Ohio State, Georgia, You know, those types of teams would hoard all of the talent because they could, right? They were the teams that were primarily playing the players under the table, and you locked them up because they couldn't hit the transfer portal. Well, now with everyone paying and with freedom of movement where you can skip from school to school every single year, you can't hoard all the talent anymore. So yes, teams like Oregon, Ohio State, you know, Texas even, they've got more talent, but that gap is just not there. And there's more talent, good talent, spread throughout the top 30 teams, where it really does feel like a lot of those teams could beat each other at any other at any time, which is why we've seen some upsets that we haven't seen historically, as many as we've seen this year, like in Northern Illinois beating Notre Dame, like a Vanderbilt going toe-to-toe with Texas and beating Alabama, a Kentucky team having Georgia on the ropes, you know, late in that game. It is just, there's more parity than ever before. Oh, Kentucky beating Ole Miss. They're just upsets that we traditionally haven't seen, which is, again, why I reiterate the regular season has to matter more than it ever has before.
Damn it, that turns me on, because that means my Hogs got a chance at something. Not this year, Danny.
I don't, this weekend, they got Tennessee. They're one of those updates.
I ain't talking about a damn win, Danny. I'm talking about a chance. The beautiful thing, y'all talking about parity. And the 12 team expansion, obviously the beautiful thing about this, and I've said this from day one, is that we're gonna instead of talking about, you know, 4, 5, and 6 and bitching about who doesn't get in at 4, now we're gonna talk about 11, 12, 13, and 14, and we're gonna bitch about who doesn't get in at 12. But the truth of the matter is that because of the transfer portal, because of NIL, because of this expansion, the beauty of it all is you've got more teams, which means more individuals, more players that weren't good enough to get to Alabama at Boise State or BYU or whatever, has a real legit shot to get to the tournament. And a program like Indiana, like my Razorbacks, like Kentucky, who you mentioned, like Ole Miss is doing right now, they have a real shot. If they embrace the NIL, they embrace the transfer portal, you have a real shot to build a team and get some momentum to get into that playoff and potentially win a championship, which none of that was possible for 90% of the country before this year. It's absolutely beautiful, man.
Oh, I love it. And think about, because there are a lot of people, college football analysts, and some that I call friends that I still get upset with because they didn't want to see this. They thought it would diminish the regular season. I think what we've seen is evidence that the regular season matters that much more, especially the month of November. Think back to a year ago, the teams that we were debating, and I'll just pull up a week 12, you know, top 25. It was really, you know, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Florida State was undefeated, Washington, Oregon, Texas, Bama. That was it. You had 8 teams that we were talking about potentially making the college football playoff. 8 teams for 4 spots. Those games were really what everyone focused on. Penn State had 2 losses. Their season was done. Ole Miss had 2 losses. Their season was done. Didn't even think about the playoffs. All of a sudden, this year, we've got at least 25 and probably close to 30 teams. And I get it that some of those are an outside shot, but they still have a chance to make this 12-team playoff. And then I think the thing that's my most favorite part about it is, yes, we have those 7 at-large bids, but we also have the certainty of knowing if you win your conference, you're going to get a seat at the table, which we've seen over the course of the 4-team playoff, somebody was going to get screwed every single year. Last year, it happened to be my alma mater, Florida State. Years previous, it was a Pac-12 champion where they got left out the last 5 years of the playoff. We've seen Big 12 champs left out. I hated that when you had conference champions out. Now, if you want to take out any debate whatsoever, win your conference. They can't keep you out. So I love that from that perspective as well.
Danny Cannell joins us, and he joins us courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff, conference, Heisman, and college football Week 12 lines. All right. As Clint said, we're going to be talking about 13, 14, 15 down the line. There's a team, and this Big Ten Conference is really intriguing to me because it seems like Penn State, all they got to do is just win the rest of their games and they're going to get a seat. I don't know that that is the case with Indiana, and I'm curious your thought. Indiana still obviously after this bye week has the game in Columbus, and then they have Purdue. If they lose to Ohio State, which I think many people believe they will, are they out? Do you think they are out, or do you still believe a one-loss Indiana team that has the schedule they have gets in anyway, regardless, like Penn State, if they have one loss.
So Indiana clearly is the most polarizing team. BYU's in that conversation too, but they've at least got a couple wins over top 25 teams in SMU and Kansas State. So that, and they might not have been winning pretty, but they're winning at least against top 25 teams. A lot of eyeballs are going to be on Indiana to see a couple things. So one, and I'm glad you mentioned Penn State, because people have ripped Indiana for their strength of schedule. Where's Penn State's massive win? Like,
Illinois.
They haven't beaten any. Right, exactly. And in Illinois isn't exactly a team that is still in the top 25, and it's not really a resounding win. And guess what else happened? Penn State and Indiana do have a couple common opponents. UCLA is one of them, a team that Indiana beat, you know, drubbed them 52, you know, put up 52 points on them. Penn State only beat UCLA 27-11. But here's what I think will happen, because I've already seen some people saying Indiana has no margin for error. They lose again. That game to Ohio State, they're done. I hate that. I think the very real reality of the situation is, what do they look like against Ohio State? So I do think how they look in that game matters. If they go out and they get beat 34-3, I think they're probably out. I don't think it's right. I don't think it should matter. No one had a problem with Clemson losing to Georgia 34-3 earlier this season, because it was the first week of the season. Everyone kind of forgot about it, but Clemson started winning games. And it's like, oh, they're getting better. But it's just because of when it happened on the calendar. But I do think it matters how Indiana looks. I think if they keep it like respectable, like if they keep it competitive, if it's within, you know, single digits, a 9 or 10 point loss, and they look like they can hang on the field, I still think they should make the playoffs. I don't know with 100% certainty if they will. That is the one great unknown, is that what will the committee do with Indiana with that schedule being weak? The non-conference is very light. FIU, Western Illinois, you know, Charlotte, that's their non-con. It's not exactly a gauntlet. But I do think that's the risk you run if you do schedule lighter, that you put yourself up for debate. So I do think it very much hinges on how do they look against Ohio State.
Boy, that would really play into your big brand bias, too, because, you know, if that's, yeah, that's not Indiana, boy, that one loss, the rest doesn't matter. They're damn sure getting in if you got the right emblem on the side of the helmet. Hey, just real quick, the setup of the 12-team playoff in terms of kind of the seven at large, the five conference champions, right now, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Danny, but right now I believe the way the rankings fell, Georgia would be the team that would miss the playoffs this year. Just that thought to me, the team, the program that's been the most dominant program in college football over the last handful of years, you know, that team being left out of a 12-team playoff this year, I know we're well putting the cart well before the horse, but,
right,
but at the end of the day, how does that format sit with you knowing that Georgia would be out?
So, couple things. One, you know, a past history isn't an indicator of future results, right? So you can't live off your past. I'm kind of okay with that. But Georgia does have a nice win over Clemson, right? They do, you know, they do have a couple resume builders. They have the win against Texas. That was a big win for them. So at least they have the wins. But here's where I think it resolves itself. I think it resolves itself this weekend. If Georgia beats Tennessee, they'll jump clearly into the top 12, and they might bump Tennessee out, or at least onto that bubble line where Georgia sits now. So they very much control their own destiny. So I think it's a debate to have today. You know, it's not that consequential, but it will after this weekend. If they lose to Tennessee at home, I have no problem telling him they are staying at home for the playoffs. Like, I'm sorry, but you had a home game where you were close to a 10-point favorite. If you don't win that game, I don't think you belong in the playoffs. I probably think they will win that game. The other thing I'm curious to know, Clint, about what you think about this, that offense has not looked like a playoff-worthy offense. Like, and you're supposed to be a balanced team going into this point of the season. Like, the offense needs to play better, and if they don't, they'll get beat. If they do, they'll win this weekend. So I think it'll take care of itself. But the other thing to keep note of, and it's going to be really hard for people to grasp, is that 12 spot, or maybe even another spot, will go to one of those group of five teams. So you might think you're safe because Georgia's ranked 12th right now. So if you're just thinking 12-team playoff, we're taking the top 12, that's not the way it's going to work. One of those group of five teams is guaranteed to make that spot, no matter where they're ranked, if they're the highest ranked conference champion. So that's going to be, there's going to be some things that are just a little off that people are going to take notice of, that's going to take some time getting used to.
Yes, sir. That's Danny Cannell. By the way, I think Georgia's got a quarterback problem, and I think they've got a pass catcher, a lack of explosion in their pass catching department. that's really going to set them back when they play better opponents. So see if they can get that figured out. But either way, Danny, man, we appreciate you coming on, brother.
You guys are the best. Always enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff, conference Heisman, and college football Week 12 lines. Danny always joins us courtesy of Bet Online. All right, I got some D'Amico Ryan's little football horny clip of the day. Everybody enjoys one of them. If football don't turn you on, hell, I don't know what you're doing listening. We'll do that next.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.